Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Good morning. Today is Friday, July 30th, and I'm your host, Steve Brown. Our top stories today: debt drama, not enough, and closing out July. Leading today's news: gear up for the next big spectacle in Washington as the debt ceiling comes back into force this weekend following a two-year suspension. The deadline will curb the Treasury's capacity to issue new debt unless lawmakers can reach an agreement, which seems far-fetched at the moment due to the Republican position. GOP leadership contends that Democrats are in a spending free-for-all and will only support raising the debt ceiling if they promise major spending reforms and cutbacks. Analyst commentary: it is a very slow-moving train wreck, outlined Gennady Goldberg, rate strategist at TD Securities. The longer they delay raising the debt ceiling, the more Treasury has to reduce bill supply, leaving less debt to invest in, particularly on a short-term basis. What you are going to see is more and more pressure on money market rates, which will in turn put pressure on money market funds. It's already having some effects. Starting at noon today, the Treasury will use the first of its so-called extraordinary measures, which will suspend sales of securities that help states and municipalities invest bond proceeds. Others will take months to kick in, and starting in October or November, the Congressional Budget Office predicts the Treasury will run out of cash. While raising the debt ceiling has turned into a bitter partisan issue in recent years, both sides have always reached a late deal to avoid the country going into default. Outlook: many expect a similar scenario this time around, and the game of chicken could continue into the coming months. However, if Democrats can't get support from 10 Republican senators, they may be forced to increase the debt limit via an upcoming budget reconciliation bill, which only needs a simple majority. They could also advance a vote to raise the debt ceiling along straight party lines before the August recess, or tie the debt ceiling to a must-pass funding bill at the end of September. In other news, Amazon reported quarterly earnings after the bell on Thursday, with revenues that were 25% higher than the same period last year. While that's pretty impressive in its own right, the percentage wasn't high enough to match analyst expectations. The e-commerce behemoth finished the quarter with $113 billion in revenue, compared to consensus estimates of $115 billion, prompting shares to slump 7% in after-hours trading. What it means: Amazon has historically exceeded expectations, so the revenue miss, the first since 2018, triggered some alarm on Wall Street. Amazon also said it would continue to see difficult comparisons to the pandemic quarters of 2020. Meaning the era of the company's bumper results may be slowing. It comes as people turn to their old shopping habits, like traveling and dining out, which could weigh on the company's rapid growth recorded through the pandemic. "It's still phenomenal growth when you think of the sheer size of the business," said Brian Yarbrough, an analyst with Edward Jones. "Obviously, the pandemic helped them, but they're not going to be able to grow that rapidly on top of those numbers." Still doing quite well. Investors overlooked better-than-expected profits, as well as a strong performance in the advertising business and cloud division. Amazon Web Services sales increased 37% to $14.8 billion, above the $14.1 billion estimate, while the other unit, which is primarily made up of advertising, grew revenue by 87% year-over-year to $7.9 billion. The numbers come just weeks after Andy Jassy, formerly chief executive of AWS, took the reins of the company, which has been growing exponentially and even more complex. It's the final trading day of the week and month, but equities are not wearing their party hats. NASDAQ futures led the declines overnight, falling 1.2% after Q2 revenues at Amazon fell short, while the retail giant gave a weaker outlook. Pinterest is also down 20% pre-market after losing monthly users during the 3 months ended June 30th. And don't forget the disappointing IPO from Robinhood. Rally growing fragile? GDP data on Thursday suggested the pace of growth may be slowing. The U.S. economy expanded at a 6.5% annualized rate in Q2, but that was discouraging given expectations for 8.4% growth. Some are looking further into the data, seeing a larger-than-expected drag from the global supply chain shortages, which could mean an economic boom when the issues are finally ironed out. There are so many cross-currents going on at the moment influencing markets, said Sebastian Mackey, a multi-asset fund manager at Investa. We've entered a more volatile period for markets, but markets will continue to move higher because we're still seeing economic growth. On the economic calendar, inflation-focused investors will also get some clarity today. The Fed's preferred inflation gauge, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, will be published this morning at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. In the 12 months through June, the so-called PCE price index likely shot up 4.1%, with the core figure not far behind at 3.7% year-over-year. Efficacy of Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine, which is pegged at 96%, declines an average of 6% every 2 months, according to the company, and effectiveness in groups like the elderly and immunocompromised diminishes even more quickly. As a result, the drug maker is recommending a third dose of its vaccine that can strongly boost protection against the Delta variant. Preliminary data, that has yet to be peer-reviewed or published, even suggests that levels of antibodies from a third booster increases antibody levels 5 to 10 times higher over its two-dose shots. Bigger picture. Other front-runners in the global immunization drive, AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, are yet to see the evidence to support the need for booster shots. The two take a similar approach in their COVID-19 vaccine technology, using viral vectors instead of their mRNA jabs produced by Pfizer and Moderna. There are two dimensions to immunity: antibodies, which decline over time, but the second, very important dimension of vaccination is the so-called T-cells. They tend to protect people against severe disease, but they also provide durability, AstraZeneca CEO Pascal Soriot declared. With the technology we use, we have very high production of T-cells. We're hoping we can have a durable vaccine that protects for a long period of time. While Pfizer intends to seek emergency use authorization for a third dose as soon as next month, the FDA and CDC currently feel that an additional dose is not necessary since Americans who are fully vaccinated are protected from severe disease and death. U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy echoed the view this week, saying people do not need to go out and get a booster shot. Should the dose be approved by the FDA, the vaccine would either need to be amended or, if the vaccine were fully FDA approved, a third dose could be given off-label. Will it be the same formula? The July study conducted by Pfizer involved a third dose of its existing vaccine, but the drug maker is also exploring whether to add an additional dose it has developed to target the Beta variant. Moderna, meanwhile, is testing three different booster strategies: a half dose of the existing vaccine and an additional dose of a new vaccine that targets the Beta variant and another dose that combines the two. Pfizer is expected to generate $33.5 billion in COVID-19 vaccine revenue in 2021, and Wall Street analysts have already priced boosters into their financial models for the company and BioNTech, which helped develop the vaccine with Pfizer. Over in Israel, the country's health ministry this week recommended booster shots for older adults and to those with weak immune systems, becoming one of the first nations in the world to formally approve a third dose of Pfizer's vaccine. According to the ministry, a full course of the Pfizer vaccine was just 39% effective at preventing infections caused by the Delta variant, though the vaccine provided high levels of protection against hospitalization, 92%, and severe illness, 91%. Back in January, Israel struck a Vaccines for Data deal with Pfizer that promised to share vast troves of information from its highly digitized healthcare system in exchange for continued flow of COVID-19 shots. As of 6:20 a.m. today, U.S. futures, crude oil, gold, and Bitcoin are all set to open in the red. On today's economic calendar, consumer sentiment is out at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please be sure to rate and review it below. Your feedback is deeply appreciated.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to SeekingAlpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.